Okay, so we've got a really an interesting case here, Wonol v. Honeyus. And it involves well, this guy John Tyler, who developed mesothelioma, and as we know, that's linked to asbestos exposure. But the really interesting thing here is that the rules for actually proving what caused this illness changed like right in the middle of the case.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that, like having to like totally rethink your whole approach?
Oh, absolutely. It really highlights how fluid the interplay can be between legal precedent and scientific understanding, especially in an area as complex as toxic tort law. And, the Boomer decision that came down wasn't just some minor adjustment. It was a pretty substantial shift in what plaintiffs needed to prove.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get into the specifics here. What were the key facts of Tyler's situation?
Well, Tyler had a documented history of asbestos exposure from a few different sources, but the one that became central to the case was his work as a brake repairman, where he worked with Bendix brakes. And I mean, extensively, we're talking hundreds and hundreds of repairs, filing, beveling, all that. He was really in direct contact with those products. But then on top of that, he also had some exposure during his time in the Navy and then later at Fort Belvoir. So you have this sort of dual narrative of exposure that played a big role in the legal arguments.
Yeah, a really important point is that while we know he worked a lot with those Bendix brakes, the exact amount of exposure wasn't super clearly documented. And that lack of precise data ended up being a big problem later on, right?
Absolutely. That's actually a common challenge in a lot of toxic tort cases, especially when you're dealing with exposures that happened a while ago. It's hard to establish a direct measurable link between the specific product and the illness. And that gets even tougher when the legal standards for proving causation require a high level of specificity.
And then the case itself went on this crazy journey through the court system, starting in D.C. Superior Court, then moving to federal court, and then getting transferred to a multi-district litigation court, which is basically a way to streamline similar cases, and finally landing back in the D.C. District Court for trial. It's like a testament to how complicated these multi-party lawsuits can be.
Yeah, it definitely shows how these cases can move around and the kind of procedural hurdles that exist. But like we mentioned, the real turning point was the Ford Motor Cova v. Boomer decision out of the Virginia Supreme Court. Because before that, the standard for causation was whether exposure to a product was a substantial contributing factor in causing the disease. So you could have multiple contributing factors.
Right. So it wasn't necessarily saying this one product was the sole cause.
Exactly. But Boomer changed the game. It set a much stricter standard. Now, the plaintiff had to prove that the defendant's product alone was enough to cause the harm. So it's a huge difference in terms of what you have to prove.
Imagine being the lawyer in that situation and having the whole game change on you mid-case.
Oh yeah, it would require a massive strategic shift.
Okay, so how did this new Boomer standard affect the expert testimony in Wonol?
Well, the plaintiff's main expert, Dr. Markovitz, had initially said that Tyler's exposure to Bendix brakes was a substantial factor, which, fit the old standard. But after Boomer, he tried to revise his opinion to meet the new standard. So he submitted a new statement saying that the exposure was independently sufficient to cause mesothelioma.
But the court didn't accept that new opinion, right?
Right. They rejected it for three main reasons. One, it was filed too late, which violated the rules about when you can disclose expert testimony. Two, the court said letting this new opinion in so late would be unfair to Honeywell because they wouldn't have enough time to respond properly. And three, this is the big one, the court pointed out that this new statement kind of contradicted what Dr. Markovitz had said earlier, which was only that the exposure was a substantial factor, not necessarily enough on its own.
Yeah, that really shows how important it is to stick to deadlines and be consistent in how you present your arguments and evidence.
It also shows how the court has to ensure things are fair for both sides. You can't just spring new information at the last minute and potentially throw the other side off.
So it wasn't just about the content of the opinion, but also the timing and how it fit into the overall case.
Exactly. And then there was another expert, Dr. Abraham, who took a more hypothetical approach. He talked about how even a single exposure to asbestos could potentially cause mesothelioma, but the court wasn't convinced by that in this particular case because he didn't directly connect this idea to Tyler's actual level of exposure to Bendix brakes. So even though everyone agrees that asbestos can cause mesothelioma, that general knowledge wasn't enough under Boomer.
So it wasn't just about proving that asbestos is bad, but showing how much exposure Tyler specifically had and whether that was enough to cause his illness.
Right. The expert had to draw a line between the general scientific knowledge and the specific facts of the case, especially the amount of exposure to the defendant's product.
Okay, so let's break down what the Boomer test actually requires for proving causation.
Sure. So it basically sets up a two-part test. First, you need to have a scientifically established benchmark, meaning you need to show how much exposure to the substance is generally considered enough to cause the disease. It's not enough to just say this substance is harmful. You have to show how much of it is likely to cause harm.
So you need some kind of dose-response relationship.
Exactly. Then the second part is that the plaintiff has to prove that their actual exposure to the defendant's product met or exceeded that scientifically established benchmark.
So in Wanall, they were saying it wasn't enough to just say any exposure is bad. They wanted evidence that Tyler's exposure was above whatever that minimum threshold is for causing mesothelioma.
Right. And this isn't just about asbestos. These principles from Boomer apply to all sorts of toxic tort cases where there could be multiple sources of exposure. It's about having stronger scientific evidence to back up your claims.
So thinking about Wanall and the impact of Boomer, there are three main things that really stand out. First, procedural stuff is super important, like we saw with that second declaration from Dr. Markowitz. Missing deadlines or not following the rules can really hurt your case.
Yeah, those procedural rules are there for a reason. They ensure a fair and organized process.
Second, expert testimony has to be really specific and rooted in solid science.
Yeah.
It's not enough to just make general statements about causation. You need to show that dose-response relationship and explain how the plaintiff's exposure fits into that.
Basically, you're saying the expert can't just say asbestos is bad. They have to say this much asbestos is likely to cause this illness, and here's how we know the plaintiff was exposed to at least that much.
Exactly. And the third takeaway is that legal precedent can change everything, like we saw with Boomer coming in and changing the whole standard for causation. So lawyers need to be adaptable and ready to adjust their strategy if the legal landscape shifts.
It's all about being prepared and staying on top of legal developments because the rules can change even in the middle of a case.
So for our listeners who are really interested in the legal system and how causation is proven, think about how closely the court examined the expert testimony. They didn't just accept general scientific principles. They wanted to see that clear link between John Tyler's exposure and the harm caused by Honeywell's specific product.
It shows that courts are raising the bar for scientific evidence in these types of cases. They're looking for more than just a possible connection. They want evidence that makes causation more probable based on quantifiable data.
And the final big takeaway from our deep dive into Wanall is that it reflects a broader trend in courts towards requiring more precise epidemiological evidence, especially in cases with multiple potential exposures.
It's about moving away from general statements about harm and towards more specific and measurable evidence that can stand up to scrutiny.
So this leads to a really interesting question with this higher bar for proving causation. What kinds of challenges will plaintiffs face in future cases like this, especially when it's so difficult to get accurate historical data on exposure levels?
Yeah.
It's something to think about as we see these types of cases continue to evolve.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how these legal standards and scientific advancements continue to intersect in the future.
Well, on that note, that wraps up our deep dive into Wanall v. Honeywell. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.